Our first guest is known to comedy consumers across the country, maybe more so these days to public radio audiences. NPR's weekend quiz show Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me features a panel of funny people, and Paula Poundstone is frequently a member of that panel. Her resume is just too long to get through in half an hour, but to encapsulate, she's been in movies, TV shows, has written one book, and is working on a second, and she'll appear at the Criterion in Medford on Saturday night at 7:30. We're told tickets are still available. Second time on the Jefferson Exchange. Paula Poundstone, welcome back.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Did your parents, Paula, ever have a sit-down with you and suggest lucrative careers?
No.
Really?
No, my mother said that she wanted me to take typing so that I had something to fall back on. And I told her that suicide came before typing on my list of things to fall back on.
So you never did actually take a typing course?
No, actually, that's not it. I did take typing. I wasn't ever very good at it. To this day, I'm not very good at it. No, we never had the lucrative. You know, I do remember my mother one time saying, she was big on secretary, actually.
Mm-hmm.
When I was little, I remember her saying, pretend you're a secretary, and that this was somehow to help motivate me to make me a better student. I don't think they, and neither did I, to be totally honest with you. I really, by the time I was in high school, I was such a depressed, horrible youth that I really didn't see much of a future one way or the other. I think, you know, that idea that you sort of, like my imagination door slammed shut for any period beyond. I thought I would maybe manage, work my way up to managing a restaurant because I was a gifted table busser.
Oh, yeah. You mentioned something, I think, in your work about the OCD part of you really is good for table busing.
It's perfect. Yeah. Yeah. It's a job that never is done anyways. And so it really, that beautiful cyclical thought pattern is just great for that. I remember specifically that I prided myself in making the surface of a table soft as a baby's bottom.
It's always fun to look at careers, not just in the perspective of looking from the beginning of it, but, you know, looking back sort of toward the middle. Like, so 20 years ago, can you imagine having said to people, hey, I'm going to be big on public radio?
No, I really can't. I still marvel that I'm there. I love it. And in truth, public radio is, I love public radio. I like the people who work in it. I appreciate the I feel like it's news you can trust, which is very helpful. And thank goodness for Garrison, because I think, I don't know the long history of public radio, but in my lifetime, you know, he's the guy that sort of came up with the idea that, hey, you know, you could do funny stuff as well. The guys that I work for, they, just a handful of people put this show together, and it's still really shoestring staff. Such that for those who don't know, we're talking about Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. That is a weekly news quiz show,
and it's on our Rhythm and News service on Saturday mornings at 10. Just to get the plug in there.
Thank you. And there's three panelists each week, and there's a host named Peter Sagal, and a scorekeeper / announcer, and that right now is what's the matter?
Bill Curtis.
Thank you. I knew it was Bill. I couldn't get the Curtis part. For many, many years, it was Carl Castle. And Carl still does the prize, which is Carl's voice on one's answering machine or, you know, voice, whatever. And when they first started, they made that up as a joke because they had no money at all. And now they have not a lot of money, but probably enough money that they could put together a prize that you could sell for more money.
Uh-huh.
But the Carl's voice on one's answering machine became so beloved that they've always just left it that. And people really want Carl's voice on their answering machine. So it actually, I mean, such a funny little engine that could kind of a show.
It is public radio genius when you think about it. Have this voice, you say, from NPR News in Washington, I'm Carl Castle. And to have that voice on your voicemail.
Oh, it's absolutely.
It's just a stroke of genius.
And to have Carl, and what's funny is he does what people ask him to do on their. So sometimes if you go to the live shows, if you ask about how Carl does that, they'll play one of them for you, and they're very funny. And you're right, for just that reason. Here's this very austere, you know, iconic voice. And now it's on your goofy answering machine. Great.
Yeah, the Rileys aren't home right now.
Yeah, exactly. Fine. I'm Carl Kessler. Yeah, it really is great. Anyways, the show is very fun to do. We're given, you know, free range to say whatever we want to say, and in fact, encouraged to do so. We have no scripts. The panelists have no scripts. And I always tell people, if it weren't, if the others didn't cheat, it would be the perfect job. No one ever talks about the steroids.
No steroids on Don't Tell Me. Paula Poundstone is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, coming to Medford for an appearance Saturday night at the Criterion. Our guest here right now. Join us on the Exchange if you'd like to have a chat. 800-838-3760 around the region. 800-838-3760. Emails go to jx@jeffnet.org. How did the gig on Wait, Don't Tell Me come about?
Oh, in the most boring of ways. They just asked me.
Oh.
I had never heard of it. They sent me audio cassette tape.
This has been a while.
It has been a while. Yeah, I think I've been there for 15 years, I think. They sent me an audio cassette tape so that I could, you know, hear what the show was. And really, I didn't even listen to it for the longest time. I put it on the island in my kitchen, which was a surface that from the moment we moved into that house, you know, collected stuff.
Replace the pile things.
When I first looked at that house, I said to the real estate agent, I go, okay, because I don't cook either. And so I go, this thing here in the middle, can we get that out of here? And she goes, oh, no, that's your island. You are going to love your island. And it's true. We used to vacation there. We spent a lot of time on the island. But anyway, so it collected, among other things, that tape. And I had a nanny one day that saw the tape laying there, and he was like, oh. And it had, you know, the name Wait, Don't Tell Me on it. And he was like, oh, I love this show. And I go, really? I don't know this show. And I said, oh, yeah, they asked me if I would do it. And he was like, oh, you got to do that. And so, so it really came about partly because they asked and partly because my nanny liked it. And I take the career advice of, he was a young guy.
Uh-huh.
And I decided that I would go with what he thought.
You know, I noticed that from looking at the bios on you, you were actually born in Huntsville, Alabama, where I met my wife. Many years apart, but evidently you never lived there for more than a month. I was just curious, your dad was an engineer. Did he work for NASA?
No, he worked for Westinghouse, I think.
Okay.
I can't even swear it, because I didn't know him yet. We used to vacation there. So, although when I've been back to work there, I don't recognize any of it. Mm-hmm. But I think that where we vacationed, you know, wasn't exactly the downtown hotspot. I remember going to a Five and Dime, and I remember going to the kind of movie house where you're in there all day.
Uh-huh.
But my grandmother had a trailer at Drucker's Trailer Park, and there was a creek behind it with red dirt, and that's all we needed.
That's right.
Those were very fun vacations. But yeah, my parents, let's see, my father was in Massachusetts getting his job the night that I was born. So,
not present at the birth.
Present at the birth, which is just as well. I wasn't looking my best. So then I was raised in Massachusetts. I have the accent of wherever I go.
I was wondering about that, because you don't have a Massachusetts accent. It's a very distinctive one.
Massachusetts accent is a little bit like a tornado, mm-hmm. in that unless you're in a really specific part, unless you're in like a really Boston neighborhood, once you're out in the burbs, it hits some and it doesn't hit others. It's a bit random. Plus, because my parents were from the South, I think I had this sort of counter accent. But if you know, we would vacation in Alabama or Texas, or my mother's from all over the South, for 2 weeks in the summertime, and I would always come home sounding like a Southern belle. I was in England for a weekend once, and I had an accent when I came back. It's embarrassing. I think it's because there's no real beginning personality there.
The natural mimic sort of thing is just comes to you, it sounds like.
It always sounds like I'm either, trying desperately to impress someone or mocking the person that I'm speaking with.
Paula Poundstone's our guest again on the Jefferson Exchange, 800-838-3760, jx@jeffnet.org. Let's talk a little more generally about comedy, because this is an interesting time in history to try to create it, given what's happened in Paris of late. And I noticed one of your recent tweets was a reference to A Christmas Carol. And I love that speech by Marley, his regrets about not making mankind his business when he was alive. And it really is about thinking about the rest of the human race. So in that context, with what happened in Paris with the Charlie Hebdo attack and everything, I mean, I just last night watched the Jon Stewart episode right after that, where he was just trying to figure out, geez, what do we say now? You know, and how do you continue to go out and be funny in a world where things are often not funny around you?
Well, first of all, things are always funny. They just are. You know, the brain is the coolest device, you know, ever. And we were given the kind that we have, the way I understand it, because we don't run very fast.
So we need to find other options?
Exactly. And so it's also why we developed sort of a group consciousness, you know, because we need each other in order to outwit the forces that be, you know. You know, otherwise we would have been eaten. And so, you know, one of the things that we were given is a sense of humor. And you know, it's funny how sense of humor, there's more than one kind of thing that's funny, but people just recognition strikes us funny. You know, I was just thinking when there was something you said that reminded. Oh, we were talking about mimicking. Brian Babylon from Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me does the best Obama, and I love. Like, I took my son with me when we were at Red Rocks over the summer, and we were riding in the van on the way there to the venue with Brian. And I kept trying to engage Brian in conversation as the president, just so my son could hear him do it. I don't even need him to do jokes. I just need him to talk to me like he's the president. And it is so damn funny. And so there's something in our brains that makes recognition funny. I'm not exactly sure why, but therefore there is no topic that's not funny. It's shared a lot of times. It's shared experience, and for me, anyways, like I love talking about my personal struggles, not because I'm totally self-centered, although I am somewhat self-centered to be honest, but because someone, I don't care how freaky what I tell the crowd about myself, there's a percentage of people in the crowd that get that. There's a percentage of people in the crowd that recognize that and they laugh at that, and then I'm not alone. And that's a huge part of the benefit of, you know, a sense of humor. And therefore, apparently, Kim Jong-un doesn't see it that way. But he's wrong.
Yeah, to put it mildly. But the shared stuff, one of the brilliant stuff that was making me laugh out loud when I was looking at tweets yesterday was you just taking shots out the window and tweeting them from your airplanes. Like landing in Idaho and saying, we had to circle the airport just a little bit to wait for more snow, I guess. Things that people recognize, like, my God, why are we still in the air?
Yeah, I've been to one might notice that for about a week or so, every one of those photos looks very similar. And it's not because they were taken in the same place. They were taken where I said they were taken. It was just that I apparently brought with me some sort of a front. I mean, I was in lots of snow there for a while.
Yeah, there's a Poundstone front hitting Chicago and then Pocatello and all that.
Honestly. Honestly, exactly. Where was I just? I was just in, I was in Utah. Which, by the way, I had to rent a car in Utah, and the GPS, I didn't understand what it was saying for the longest time. I would just listen to the number of the exit or the highway that I was supposed to take. And then I realized the GPS was saying Utah.
Oh, instead of Utah.
Yeah. because the GPS uses the Utah joke, you know. Utah, as opposed to Idaho.
Right. I noticed that it's been pointed out that you're number 88 on Comedy Central's 2004 list of the 100 greatest stand-ups of all time.
Well, Jesus, and if that was in 2004, I must have worked my way up. I must be 87 by now.
Somebody must have at least died or something above you, yeah.
But it's of all time.
Of all time.
So,
oh, okay,
yeah,
sure.
Living or dead.
All right.
Yeah.
But then number 6 on Maxim's list of worst comedians of all time. It's a real split.
I'm number 6?
Yeah.
Wow. See, I did better with them. Still, it's a better number. I understand it's in a more negative category. Yeah, I don't know that you can really do that, but it's I don't know, but it gets it sparks people's interest in comedy. I'm not sure that you can really. It's apples and oranges.
Apples and coconuts, or something. We have a
yeah.
Call
I'm not even sure. You know, it, honestly, it's apples and jackhammers. But that's good.
Well, I mean, comedians are certainly very different. Let's take a call here from Paul in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking to Paula Poundstone.
Good morning, guys. I can usually get Jeff to laugh when I come on here.
Easy.
Yeah, and the thing that he's an easy crowd, but the it seems to me that all humor starts with a kernel of truth. And then it gets turned about 90 degrees, either an unexpected turn or hyperbole or something like that. Could you talk about that?
All right. Thanks for that, Paul.
Thanks, Paul. Honestly, if I had the slightest idea what the formula was, I would be so rich and famous and in demand that I would neither be on the floor of this house.
You like the floor with the phone. I remember that from your TV show from years ago.
Yeah, I do. I sleep on the floor. I sleep on the floor currently with a space heater and two German Shepherd mixed dogs beside me and see if I slept in a bed. I don't think they could get up there.
Ah.
But they're great for heat.
It's a two-dog night in Los Angeles.
That's exactly right. Yeah, they really are. I have 15 cats, and in the wintertime, in the summer, they fight more than they do in the winter, because in the winter, they need each other more. All of a sudden, they're like, yeah, I know I hated you yesterday, but what do you say we snuggle?
Yeah, come here, it's cold.
All right, so anyways, in terms of, I don't know. I think there's recognition and kind of laughs, and there's, surprise kind of laughs, and I'm just glad that there's any at all. It is the most healing thing in the world.
Are there any sacred cows you won't take on in comedy? Any places where you've constructed some fences and said, I'm not going to be on that one?
Well, not likely to repeat the interview. The film, not the...
Right.
I was doing a set the other day on... Right now, they are using temporary hosts for the Late Late Show.
Oh, right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Since Craig Ferguson left.
Right, and then they're getting their new guy ready, and in the meantime, they're using these temporary hosts, and I taped one. It hasn't aired yet the other day. They always want to know, it's for standards and practices, they say, for the censors. They want to know what you're going to say. And honestly, I really never quite know what I'm going to say, but I'll write some stuff down for them. I'll say, well, I'll try to say this. And then after that, I don't necessarily say that, but whatever. So anyways, I had opened with a thing just saying, I'm here tonight despite Kim Jong-un, and you know what? They said you can't say that.
Really?
Mm-hmm. They don't even want you to say the guy's name.
Wow.
It reminds me of that. There was a story in the news recently. I forget what town it was in. But there was a newspaper where a journalist had written something about, like, a city council guy, I think it was. And the city council guy was so angry. And it was a news piece. It was actually a legitimate news piece. But the city council guy got really mad and wrote to them at the newspaper and said, you can't use my name.
That's a new one. We got about 2 minutes left with Paula Poundstone. Here's a call from Patrick in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning. Hi, Paula. I'm a big fan of yours for a long time. You're so funny.
Thank you.
wanted to, you were on Craig Ferguson, I think you were behind this robot skeleton or something.
I did
that,
once,
was
yeah.
that all improv? It was incredible, like the stuff you were coming up with.
Oh,
and I love Jim Gaffigan as well. He's been hosting the last couple nights. Thanks for everything you've done. You're great.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, they, for a little while, it was a very, you know, one of the great things about Craig and the producers on that show, they really are terrific. They're very experimental. They want you to come on and have a good time with the, sort of in the way that Wait Wait does, sort of with the understanding that generally speaking, if you're having a good time, probably so is the crowd watching. And so they have the skeleton character guy, and they for a while were inviting people to come be the skeleton. And yes, there was no script. And you didn't have to do a fake voice or anything. They go, no, just do your own voice. But I just got to sit sort of slightly backstage. I got to choose the hair for the skeleton, and I believe I chose a beehive. And it was a blast. I'm so glad someone appreciated it.
Was he still called Jeff for those?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I recently, actually the last time I was on the show, I met the guy that was Jeff's official voice, and it felt awkward.
Really? You're like you'd taken his place for a night or something?
Yeah. There's something, you know, it was like I had, what is that? You know, what is that when someone's spirit goes into someone else's body, like those movies, you know?
Possession, like, or something?
Right, exactly. Like I had, I had been his possessor for a brief period.
So when does your hosting of the Late Late Show air?
Wouldn't it be great if I could just say the answer to that? Okay. Wouldn't that make me a trained professional?
I guess we'll have to check our local listings. I can tell the audience that
March, I think.
In March, okay. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me airs on the Rhythm and News Service of JPR, one of our other audio services. Saturday mornings at 10, Paula Poundstone will be at the Criterion Theater in Medford Saturday night at 7:30. We understand there are still tickets available. There certainly were yesterday. Not many, though. Paula, thanks so much for joining us. Always good to visit with you.
Thanks so much. It was nice talking with you.
All right, take care.